Thursday morning, January 1st, Inyan, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes, Shua Katz.
The question is, what do Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio, Yogi Berra, Whitey Ford, Mickey Mantle,
long list.
Yeah, I'm getting there. Jeter, Derek Jeter, Bernie Williams, Jorge Posada, and Mariano Rivera all have in common with the speaker. All homegrown. There's the groan. Go home. Without further ado.
Bernie, would you like your intro now?
All right. First, just want to thank Mark for the opportunity to share some thoughts on the report. Also, of course, thank the support crew for coming out. I'm sure many were wondering when anybody saw the title this year, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes. What was he thinking talking about Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes? Why is he thinking about that? So let's get started, and then we'll see why that was on my mind at all. Okay, source number one. This week's Parashas Vayechi starts off with the story of Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov is really lying on his deathbed. He's making his final words, talking to his children. Later on in the parsha, we'll see him give brachos to all of his children. And right now, he's talking specifically to Yosef. So, in source number one, pasuk chaf tes, vayikrevu yemei Yisrael lamus. Yaakov asks Yosef, please don't bury me in Mitzrayim. Whatever you do, I really don't want to be buried in Mitzrayim. Rather, what do I want you to do for me? Pasuk Lamed. Carry me from Mitzrayim. Bury me in the burial plot of our forefathers in Maras HaMachpelah, in Eretz Kenaan. Vayomar, Anochi Ayasechid Varecha. Yosef responds to Yaakov, I will do just as you told me to do. I'm going to listen to your commands. I'm going to listen to your orders. I will take you out of Mitzrayim and bury you in Eretz Yisrael. Vayomer Yishav Ali Vayishav Alo. So Yosef took an oath. He swore to Yaakov that he would do so. And the Mefarshim will discuss why that oath was necessary, but we're not going to go into that today. Vayishtachu Yisrael Arosh Hamitah. Finally, the passage ends, and we have the final result of the passage. Yaakov commands Yosef to bury him in Eretz Kenaan and not in Mitzrayim, and Yosef says that he will obey his father's orders, and he will do so. In source number two, the Medrash quotes a very interesting opinion on this pasuk. Vayomar anochi asach dvarecha. That's when Yosef responds to Yaakov that he'll do just as Yaakov asks. Rabbi Meir Omer, mitzvah l'kayin divrei hamitz. Rabbi Meir says from this phrase of Ayomar Anochi Asachid Dvarecha, from this sentence in which Yosef tells Yaakov that he'll bury Yaakov in Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Meir learns from this response of Yosef the following: Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Hamis. We have a mitzvah to fulfill that which a mace requests. When somebody is about to die and he makes some requests about what he wants to happen after his life, so we have a mitzvah to fulfill whatever the mace requests. We have to ask a couple of questions on Rabbi Meir's Shita of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes and how he learns that from this story in which Yosef responds to Yaakov, Vayomar Anochi Asechid Varecha. So first of all, is this the actual source for Rabbi Meir's opinion of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes? Is Yosef's response to Yaakov the actual source for our obligation to fulfill the requests of the mace? Or is possibly there some other source around that teaches us this din? But rather, Vayomar Anochi Asech Dvarecha, Yosef's response to Yaakov is only a kind of a smachta. It's a kind of just reliance on the psukim to teach us something that we already knew. But really, we knew the chi of the obligation to fulfill the wishes of a mace from somewhere else. So what is the real source for Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes? And furthermore, is Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes just a mitzvah? Is it just something good to do? Or is this a hardcore chiyuv? Is there an absolute obligation for us to listen to what a mace requests? And furthermore, Rabbi Meir's statement of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Yemes, it seems like a pretty broad statement. Do we have an obligation to fulfill every single thing that a mace requests before he's about to die? every single thing that a mace wants we have to do? Is this just all-encompassing, or is there are there some limitations to exactly what type of tzivuyim, what type of commandments can a mace make for us to for him to trigger the obligation for us to fulfill those commandments? And furthermore, we have two characters in this story in the beginning of Vayechi. We have Yaakov and Yosef. So we have to ask, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis, to what types of people does this obligation apply? Does this apply only to a father and a son? Does it apply only to somebody like Yosef, who's going to inherit his father's possessions? Only Yosef, who's a son and a yorish, he will be obligated to fulfill the mace's, the deceased's requests? Or is this an obligation even for other people besides just the son or just the yorshim of the mace? And furthermore, after answering all of these questions, how do these questions reflect on exactly what the character and nature of this mitzvah is? What is this mitzvah all about? What are we trying to accomplish? Or how does this mitzvah work? What is the mechanism of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis? What obligates us? What exactly happens when we're obligated to fulfill the wishes of a mace? So we're not going to be... Yeah?
From a Tanakh point of view, why make them swear?
That's discussed by many of the Mefarshim. The Ramban explains that he did so just in case Pyro would give him trouble. He wanted to have a backup plan, a security, an insurance that Yosef would really do so in case Yosef fell into trouble with Pyro. But this it's a discussion. But we're not going to get into that today. Okay. So we have a whole bunch of questions. We're not going to be able to get into every single question, but hopefully we'll definitely be able to get into the character and the nature of this law of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis and try to pinpoint some of the other questions that we raised. What type of chiyuv is this? What level of obligation is it? To whom does it apply? And what is the real source for it? So let's start one by one. Let's go back to the source for mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. We quoted the Medrash that Rabbi Meir says mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis comes from this pasuk of Vayomar Anochi Asach Edvarecha. But as we'll see, it's not so simple that the source for this din is from Vayomar Anochi Asach Edvarecha. If you go to source number 3, Tosfos in Ksuvis on Pevav Amar Aleph says the following. So Tosfos is arguing with Rashi about mitzvos derabanan. Can we force people to do mitzvos derabanan? We normally have a rule that for mitzvos asei midoraisa, we say makin oso ad sheyetzei nafsho. If somebody refuses, absolutely refuses to do a mitzvah doraisa, he refuses to take lulav, he refuses to listen to shofar, so we give him makos until he fulfills that mitzvah. Does the same din, does the same rule apply to mitzvos derabanan, mitzvos asei derabanan? If the Rabbanan command you to do a certain mitzvah, can we force you to do that mitzvah, or is that limited only to mitzvos asei mido raisa, only to mitzvos asei from the Torah? So that's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi is of the opinion that we don't force people to do mitzvos derabanan. However, Tosfos disagrees, and let's see exactly how Tosfos proves his opinion. So in source number 3, Ve'ein Nira, on the first line, Ve'ein Nira, I don't like Rashi's opinion. I disagree with Rashi. The Ashkechan de Kofin b'mitzvos derabanan, Kigon mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. We see that we do force people to do mitzvos derabanan. How do I know that we force people to do mitzvos derabanan? From the mitzvah that we're talking about this morning. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. The Aminan b'hasholeach. In the fourth parak of Masaches Gittin, the Kofin as a Yorshim. We force the Yorshim to fulfill what their father or what the mace commanded them to do. So from this line of Kofin as HaYorshim, Tosos learns that we do obligate people, we do force people to do mitzvos derabanan. So now Tosos is making a very simple assumption here. He's assuming the mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is only a mitzvah derabanan. And therefore, he must assume that Vayomar Anochi Asechid Varecha, in the Medrash, quoting Rabbi Meir, saying Vayomar Anochi Asechid Varecha, Yosef's response to Yaakov teaches us mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis, that must be just an asmachta, because Tosos assumes in a very hardcore fashion that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is only a mitzvah derabanan. So the ultimate source for mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is just the Rabbanan. The Rabbanan taught us that we have to obey the commands and the requests of a mace. Yeah?
What's the case we get? Is it a Shkibirah case?
So we're going to get into that. An offhand answer, but we're going to get into that. The mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis applies not only to somebody lying on his deathbed, but even to somebody who made a request while he was fully healthy, and then died. After the death, you're still commanded to to fulfill the request of the mace. However, there are some limitations to that, and we'll get into exactly the specifications of what type of when it applies, and also the difference between Mitzvah Divrei HaMace and Shlivim. We're going to get into it. But for now, it definitely applies to a bari, to somebody who's fully healthy, makes a request, and then he dies. His yorshim or other people are obligated to fulfill his request. Okay, so let's see from Tosos that Tosos argues that Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace is a mitzvah d'Rabbanan. And he uses, this is a second assumption of Tosos, Tosos uses Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace as a mitzvah d'Rabbanan to prove a general rule about mitzvahs d'Rabbanan that we force people to do mitzvahs d'Rabbanan. So it seems like Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace is just a stam mitzvah d'Rabbanan. D'Rabbanan require us to adhere to the requests of a mace. If we go to source number 4 and the Shilos Utruvos of the Tashbates, we'll see another possible source for this mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace. So if you go to the fourth line in the Tashbates, in source number 4, the Tashbates says the following. Shalo bechol davar amru mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace. Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace is not an all-encompassing rule. It doesn't apply in every single case. There are some limitations to it. And the Tashbates has an incredible language coming up. She'in ha'adam bish'as misaso navi velo melech v'nasi she'yetzave ha'chaim l'kayim devarav. A person who's on his deathbed is not like a Navi or a Melech or a Nasi, and he can command to do whatever he wants, and we have an obligation to fulfill whatever he desires, whatever he wishes. He doesn't have such incredible power. She'in Shilton b'yom ha'maves. Right, quoting a pasuk from, where is he in Shilton b'yom ha'maves again?
From
Kohelis. Right. She'in Shilton b'yom ha'maves. Right, so the Tashbites is using that pasuk from Kohelis as a type of poetic way of saying that somebody on his deathbed he's not omnipotent. He can't just say that whatever I want, you have to do. V'lo amruzeh ela keshetziva sheyase mimamono klum. There's a very important limitation to mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace, and that is that the deceased can require us to do something for him only if it pertains to his possessions and to his money. A person has control over his possessions, over his estate, and he can command us what to do with that estate. And everyone, not only his children, everybody will be obligated to fulfill his request. This mitzvah of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace, according to the Tashbites, is included in the category of Mitzvahs Nachalos. Mitzvahs Nachalos refers to the Torah's structural system for inheritance. Usually the dinim of the Torah go as follows. There are dinei Yerusha, right? So there's a certain order of children who inherit. And first comes the son, then comes the father or the daughter, I forgot which. But Hold on one second.
First we have down, then all the way up, then lateral. Down.
Okay, there you go. So we have Dina Yerusha, right? So we have laws about who inherits. So normally the Torah commands that if a person dies, whoever is in line to inherit the deceased inherits his possessions automatically. Nothing more, nothing less. It's just an automatic process that the Torah sets up, that if we have somebody who dies, he bequeaths his possessions to whoever inherits him. And that's what's called mitzvahs nachalos. Nachalos refers to inheritance. The Tashbites is saying that the source for mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace is really stemming from that category, that structure of inheritance. We thought the only way that possessions could go from a deceased to somebody who's alive was through inheritance, through Yerusha. However, the Tashbites is mechadesh. The Tashbites has an incredible shita that mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace is a way for the mace to have his money go somewhere else other than in the line of inheritance.
What's that have to do with the pasuk in
Bayechi? It doesn't. That's the whole point, right? So the pasuk in Bayechi is not the real source for mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace according to the Tashbites. According to the Tashbites, that source is really just an asmachta. It's just a nice way of saying, oh, we see mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei HaMace in the Torah in Parashas Vayechi with Yaakov and Yosef. But the real source is this category of nachalos, of inheritance. And it's a way for the mace to decide that his possessions should go somewhere else. Basically, the Torah says that usually we follow the lines of Yerusha, but if you have a deceased who makes a certain command and he says, I want my possessions to go somewhere else, I want my possessions to go to X, Y, or Z, we're obligated to fulfill his command based on this mitzvah of mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz. It very well could be that this is still a mitzvah derabanan, and that the Tashlis is just arguing that it falls into the category of Yerusha in terms of that this is the way we relate to someone's possessions after he dies. There's a certain way that we have to relate to possessions after someone dies. Usually we follow Yerusha. The Tashbetz is Mechadish that we have this other thing called Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hametz, where if somebody can make a certain request, then we will be obligated to fulfill that request. So just hold on one second. Up until now, we've had two ways to formulate exactly what Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hametz is. If we have to define what is Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hametz, one way to define it is in an all-encompassing fashion. Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hametz, adhere to the requests of the Hametz. If a mace asks for certain things, asks for certain wishes, adhere to his requests. Do as he wishes. And second, another slightly more nuanced formulation comes out of the Tashbetz. Because the Tashbetz limits mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz not to all things going on in the world, but rather specifically to the money and the estate of the mace. So according to the Tashbetz, the mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz is do with the mace's money as he wishes. It's not just adhere stam to the requests of a mace. Rather, it's do with his money as he wishes. Yeah.
So the Tashbetz would have to say that the Yaakov, it really wasn't strictly speaking the kind of Yerushalayim, because that really wasn't related to his possessions.
Exactly. Very, very good point. Hopefully we'll come back to that at the very end of this year if we have time. But there's a whole machlok that's about the scope of mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz. Does mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz, is it limited to things going on with things involved with money?
The measures would say they're using that phraseology. Mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz is being used in a loose, non-strictly speaking, perfect manner.
Exactly.
The burial is not really related to Yaakov's possession.
Absolutely. Yeah. Unless Yosef would have used some of the money that he inherited from Yaakov in order to bury him, but whatever. Yeah, it seems like it's being used in a loose fashion. Yeah.
Why couldn't you just say that a person's body is considered one of his possessions? So exactly where Yaakov, gets buried could in theory fall under a category like this.
I'm not sure. I don't know if you would consider it a part of his mom.
I don't think we would even say that. A person
is cut a
Kodesh Baruch
Hu on his
body. It's not the Kodesh Baruch Hu on his body, too. I abstain on that question. Yeah.
Could you elaborate a little on the Hakala? Because I'm seeing a couple of contradictions in there.
Okay, so let's review for one second, okay? There's a category called mitzvahs nachalos. There's a category called how do we relate to a person's possessions after he dies. That's a category in halacha called nachalos. Right? Okay. Now, the main way that we relate to somebody's possessions after he dies is through the din of the Torah, called Yerusha, which are automatic. Right? If somebody stands in line to inherit a deceased, then the deceased bequeaths his possessions to the inheritor automatically. Now, the Tashbetz is just saying that there's another way that we can relate to a mace's possessions aside from Yerusha. And that way is through mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz, namely, if a deceased makes a certain request right before he dies, we have an obligation to fulfill that request. Now, that's specifically limited to money. So therefore, let's take a specific example. Let's say Reuven is our deceased. He requests before he dies that we give his money to Shimon, right? Even though Shimon is not his son. So we have an obligation to give Reuven's money to Shimon based on mitzvah l'chaim divrei hametz, based on this mitzvah derabanan, and that basically sets up a way in which the money goes from Reuven to Shimon instead of from Reuven to his inheritors.
So far, so good. But if I heard you right, you're saying the Tashbetz couldn't possibly be saying that second feature is also the derisa.
I personally think that he's saying that it's a mitzvah derabanan, but I can't prove
it. I wish you would have said it. But that flies in the face of a couple of things. One, everything they do with wills of our ilk, pre-machnes, to avoid that issue. And second,
so
it would fly in the face of the mitzvah kisetze, unless you want to say that's a specific exception.
Hold on. Okay, so one by one. First of all, you mentioned wills, right? You're referring to Matnash Shkivmiyak?
And the modern day, whatever we do for a will to circumvent Hilchos Yerusha, my understanding was that that is done with a retroactive, but retroactive effective pre-death.
Yes. Thinking. So we're,
otherwise you trip on Yerusha issues. That's contradiction to this.
That it takes place retroactively? Right, because, okay, so that's working through a different mechanism of Kenyan than this is.
But Tash Bates would say it's not necessary. I can do whatever I want.
We're going to get exactly to that question.
And right? What does he do about the, specifically?
The mitzvah in Kiseita? What mitzvah in Kiseita?
The language there is, somebody help me, Biyomaso, Loyachola, Akir, has been asked.
Oh, about Bechor?
Yeah, right, so you'd have to say that's a specific exception where you can't do it.
No, what the Tashbetz is saying is that it's clear from the Torah that you can't get involved in Dina Yerusha. You can't start saying that that I want to do Yerusha my way and not the Torah's way.
That's not what this says.
Because this is not working through Yerusha. This is an alternate method. This is not working through Yerusha. We're not saying that Shimon inherits Reuben Midina Yerusha of the Torah. Rather,
Midina Yerusha of the Rabbanim? Or Midina?
It's not Yerusha. It's not Yerusha at all. We wouldn't call it Yerusha. It's just a mitzvah to give the money to Shimon. We wouldn't call it Yerusha. He doesn't inherit it. None of the laws of Yerusha apply to it.
So it's a way to circumvent Yerusha.
It's the same effect as a pre-death Kenyan, but it happens post-death. But
right.
It's a big Kiddush, the Tash Beis.
Yeah. And would fall in another one of those categories where...
Now, hold on.
Mysel is Kenyan.
So I'm not sure if according to the Tash Beis, there would be a Kenyan. It could be that there's just a mitzvah to give this money to Shimon. Okay, so
say something about Yerusha.
What?
Say something about Yerusha. It's a Maiselus Kenyan.
So this wouldn't be
any worse.
But within Yerusha, all of the Yorshim have an immediate zechus, have an immediate stake in that money. According to the Tashbetz, all the Tashbetz is saying is that when Reuven dies, so there's a mitzvah to fulfill exactly what Reuven wanted. And we have a mitzvah to give his money to Shimon. Nobody's saying that Shimon owns the money yet. Although we'll see that soon. Nobody's saying that Shimon was Kona the money.
All we're saying
is that there's an obligation to give the money from moving to Shimon.
We're gluing on a whole lot of, sounds to me like assumptions.
No.
Let's read the line again.
Elakashatziva shiyasi mimamono klum, shemitzva lakayim devaro, shahari vimamut shalo yachol letzavos, v'chayovin hakol lakayim devaro. He's allowed to make certain commands about his money, and everybody's obligated to fulfill his command.
There.
Within the Tashbetz.
Yeah.
I mean, the way we're interpreting the Tashbetz or what the Tashbetz says.
I agree with okay. Tashbetz.
Okay. So let's just recap for a second. Let's get up to speed. So we've had two formulations so far of how exactly we have to understand mitzvah l'kayim divrei amis. Number one, in a very broad scope, adhere to the requests of a mace. Number two, from the Tashbetz, do with the mace's possessions as he requires or as he commands. Now, what both of those have in common is that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is working as a mitzvah. There's an obligation to do what the mace wants. However, as we've just been discussing, and this is exactly where we're leaving, if we're comparing mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis to Yerusha already, right, we're already talking about mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis in the sense of inheritance, can we take even a step further? Can we say that just as Yorshim, inheritors, when their deceased dies, when whoever's bequeathing money to inheritors dies, the inheritors have an automatic stake in the possessions that the bequeather leaves to them? Right, right. When the deceased dies, the Yorshim automatically have a privilege in that in his estate. Right? The estate already belongs to the Yorshim. Can we say the same thing for mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis? That if a mace requests something, after he dies, can there be an automatic transference from the estate of the mace to the estate of whoever he wants to give his money to? So this approach comes out of Rabbeinu Tam in a very clear fashion. Let's go to source number 5. Rabbeinu Tam says the following. Ve'ata yesh chiluk, dibivari, that's talking about mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis, right? So mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis applies even to a bari, even to somebody who's fully healthy when he makes his request. In ba'u liat shlish, harei heim l'mishan ishtalhu lo, v'im lo, lo. So let's just give a little bit of background to Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam makes some limitations on mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. Rabbi Yitam says that when will we apply this rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis? So let's take a specific case. We have three people, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Okay? Reuven is the deceased. Reuven is our mace. Reuven requests, before he dies, even if he was fully healthy, Reuven requests that his money go to Levi. Reuven wants his money to go to Levi. Okay? Rabbeinu Tam says that the only way in which we will be obligated to give Reuven's money to Levi is if Reuven already gave his money to Shimon, a third party, a kind of transfer party called a shlish, before Reuven died. Reuven's possessions must have been in Shimon's reshus before Reuven died in order for us to have an obligation to give Reuven's money to Levi. Okay, so Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven's about to die. He gives his money to Shimon. Reuven dies. Therefore, we have an obligation to take the money out of Shimon's possession and give it to Levi based on mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. That is the only case in which we will apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis according to Rabbeinu Tam. It has to be biyad shlish, this third party who we're calling Shimon.
Yeah. And if not, then it would go to Reuven's Yorshim.
Exactly. Then the regular dinim of Yerusha would take place. Now, Rabbeinu Tam, in introducing that limitation, has a very, very fundamental line. In Bo Liad Shlish, Harei Heim L'Mish Nishtal Chula. If they were in the hands of a Shlish, if they were in the hands of Shimon, when Reuven dies, then what happens? Harei Heim L'Mish Nishtal Chula. They already belong to Levi. They already belong to the person who Reuven wanted to send the money to. That is something completely different from what we've seen so far. What we've seen so far is that there's a mitzvah, there's an obligation for us to fulfill the request of a mace. Rabbeinu Tam is adding much more. Rabbeinu Tam is saying that if a mace makes a certain request, when the mace dies, based on his request, his money is transferred to the possession of whoever he wanted the money to go to. So in our case, we have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven gets rid of his money, he gives it to the third party called Shimon. When Reuven dies, his money is already transferred to the possession of Levi. Levi is the rightful owner of Reuven's money, despite the fact that Levi made no kinyan, he didn't make any formal acquisition, he didn't do hagbah, he didn't do meshicha, he didn't do anything to Reuven's estate or to Reuven's money or to what Reuven wanted to give him. Nevertheless, according to Rabbeinu Tam, Levi is the rightful owner of this money. So Rabbeinu Tam is arguing that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is actually a little bit misleading. It's not really mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. It's not like we have an obligation to fulfill what the mace wants. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is a way of saying that we have a very unique kinyan derabanan. We have a very unique kinyan that derabanan make up, that derabanan generate, in which a mace puts into place a certain command, and based on that command, when the mace dies, his possessions are transferred to whoever he wanted to give his possessions to. According to the Rabbanan, that works as a kinyan. Levi owns what Reuven wanted to give him after Reuven dies, before Levi makes a formal acquisition. Yeah?
I don't see the chiddush there. That is simply a, not a mamash lashon, but it's a budget case where you could have, there's a maisa kinyan, and it's being made for a retroactive, not a retroactive,
in this case,
later tonight.
So in this case, there's no maisa kinyan. Remember.
There is.
A shlish is not a maisa kinyan. A shlish is
not. Well, he's like a shliach.
Shimon's a shliach, exactly. But the money was never acquired by Levi. He's just a shliach to give the money.
Shimon did the maisa. Shimon does a maisa kinyan.
No, okay. So we're not talking about a case of zachin la'anam shlo b'fanov. We're not talking about a case of zechus. No acquisition, I'm stipulating this. This is the case, and trust me on this. No acquisition took place before...
You're running for office.
No acquisition took place before Reuven died. This is not a case of Zachin Adam Shalom Bafanov. All Reuven said was, Shimon, I want you to take my money to Levi. No acquisition takes place if I ask Shimon to take my money to Levi.
Wait. Didn't Shimon acquire it?
No, Shimon did not acquire the money.
So what is the difference then, whether he gave it to Shimon or not?
So that's one of Rabbeinu Tam's limitations on mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis, in order to say that we're going to get back into exactly why Rabbeinu Tam would require it to go into the hands of Shimon, but it's perfectly clear that Shimon does not acquire the money.
How are you getting officially Rabbeinu Tam? Tashbetz says that himself directly.
That what?
That
Right, he's getting that from Rabbi Natan. These limitations come from Rabbi Natan throughout the
Doris. I don't see how you see in Rabbi Natan's words no kinyan.
No kinyan by Shimon.
Yeah.
That's the case. I'll prove to you this way. If they were kinyan by Shimon, there would be no such thing as mitzvah l'chaim divrei Yamis. We wouldn't be talking about this. Levi would have owned the money before Reuven even died. Yeah.
It's not that Shimon owns it from a possession standpoint, but it's been removed from the estate of Reuven. To the degree it's been removed from the estate of Reuven in the hands of a third party, therefore the normal laws of Yerusha don't take into effect.
Exactly. Baruch Shakivanzal, the Divrei HaMordechai, explaining the Rabbeinu Tam. So go to source number 6. Rabbeinu Tam Pasak, Zelo Amrina de Mitzvah Lekayim Divrei Amis, Elohicha de Hushlash Biyad Hashlish Mitchila Lekach. Exactly as Rasha said, so what's the point of why does Rabbeinu Tam introduce this limitation that we have to give the money into the hands of a shlish, into the hands of Shimon, in order to take it out of Reuven's estate and prevent it from going to his yorshin? Reuven gives the money into Shimon's possession. Shimon makes no acquisition. But since the money is in Shimon's possession, therefore it's not in Reuven's possession. Since it's not in Reuven's possession, therefore the laws of Yerusha do not apply. Okay? So that's exactly what Rabbeinu Tam is saying. Rabbeinu Tam is saying that Reuven has to give the money into Shimon's possession. Shimon is the shlish. Once the money is in Shimon's possession, when Reuven dies, an acquisition is made by Levi on the money. Levi acquires the money through the mechanism of mitzvah l'chaim divrei Hamis. Okay, so let's recap for one sec. We've had three possible approaches to mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis, to formulate exactly what we're saying by mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis. Number one was the all-encompassing approach. Mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis, just in the pashtus of the words, adhere to the requests of a mace. What a mace wants, do as he wishes. That's number one. Number two, we saw in the Tashbits, the Tashbits argued that we have a specific mitzvah to do with the deceased's possessions as he wishes. Do with his money as he desires. That's a specific mitzvah with regard to the mace's possessions, with regard to his money. But what both of those formulations have in common is that all we are talking about is a mitzvah. There's an obligation there's an obligation to fulfill the mace's request. Now, according to both of those approaches, and this will clarify exactly what's been going on, according to both of those approaches, the regular dinim of Yerusha apply. The yorshim of the mace inherit all of the mace's possessions. It's just that there's an obligation on the yorshim to give the money to whoever the mace wanted the money to go to. But the regular dinim of Yerusha still apply. But we have this third approach of Rabbeinu Tam, a very mechudash approach, that mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis is really misleading. It's not a mitzvah. It's not that the yorshim have an obligation. It's not that the yorshim inherit the money and then have an obligation to give it to whoever their mace wanted it to go to. That's not what's happening here. Rather, when a mace makes a certain command, when he makes a request, after he dies, the rabbanon generate a kinyan from the mace's rishus, or from the shlish's rishus, into whoever's rishus the mace wanted the money to go to. So therefore, as we just quoted in the Mordechai and Rabbeinu Tam, the yorshim never inherit the money of the mace, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Because there's a kinyan that goes from the rishus of the mace to the rishus of whoever the money of whoever he wanted the money to go to. So if we go back to our three characters, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, let's get down exactly what would be the difference according to these three approaches. We have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven is our mace, Shimon is our shlish, our third party, and Levi is our mikabel, the person who Reuven wants the money to go to. So according to the first two approaches, that mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis is a pure mitzvah, it's an obligation. So Reuven, the deceased's money, his money goes to his inheritors, to his sons. And then there's an obligation on Reuven's sons to give the money to Levi, to the mikabel. But according to Rabbeinu Tam, no such thing happens. The yorshim never inherit Reuven's money. Rather, Levi acquires Reuven's money after Reuven dies, before any Yerusha, any inheritance, takes place. That's the exact difference between these two general approaches of, on the one hand, viewing mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis as an obligation, a mitzvah, and on the other hand, viewing mitzvah l'chaim divrei hamis as a kinyan. Okay. All right. Let's get back to one more question that I think Mark raised, which is a really very, very, very good question, which the Rishon raised themselves. Within the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, remember Rabbeinu Tam is the person who argues of the Kenyan approach, that Reuven's money is acquired by Levi before any inheritance transpires. There's just a Kenyan that takes place based on the requests of the Mace, based on the requests of Reuven. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's one question that we have to deal with. And that is that we seem to already have a structure in halacha to make kinyanim at the time of death, called matnas shchiv meira. A shchiv meira is somebody who's lying on his deathbed. And according to matnas shchiv meira, a shchiv meira has the ability to set or to give his possessions to anybody he wants while he's on his deathbed, and no formal acquisition is required. So if we have our case again, we have Reuven and Shimon. Reuven is a shchiv meira. He's lying on his deathbed. He's about to die. Reuven says, I want my money to go to Yosef. Okay? So his money goes to Yosef just by the fact that Reuven said that he wants his money to go to Yosef. That's what's called a matnas shchiv meira. Now that sounds very, very familiar, because that sounds almost the same thing as what we've just been describing according to Rabbeinu Tam in Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Amis. According to Rabbeinu Tam, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Amis is a way of acquiring the Mace's possessions. And so too is Matnas Shchiv Meira. So why do we need both? Why do we need both of these systems in Halacha called Matnas Shchiv Meira and Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Amis in order for a deceased to give his possessions to somebody else? And that's what Tosos asks in source number 7. Tosos asks, Yesh makshin, kim on the mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, in kim mayahani had divrei shchiv meira k'ksuda b'chim surin danu. If we already have mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, why do we need matnas shchiv meira? Why are both necessary? V'omer Rabbeinu Tam, so now we have Rabbeinu Tam again, d'lo amrin on mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, ela k'shehushlash mitchila l'kach. We've seen this limitation already. According to Rabbeinu Tam, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis applies only if the deceased, if Reuven's money was in the hands of a third party, in the hands of a shlish, before he died. But matnas shchiv meira, if Reuven is lying on his deathbed and just says that he wants his money to go to Yosef, that applies in all scenarios and all cases. His money need not go into the hands of a third party in order for that kinyan of matnas shchiv meira to work. The second difference, according to Rabbeinu Tam, is the following. Inami, davka b'meis nosein b'chaye mekabel, aval divrei shchiv meira b'chol inyan kimesurin dam. So Rabbeinu Tam introduces another limitation to mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, which is the following. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis works only if the mekabel, Levi, is still alive at the time that Reuven, the mace, dies. When Reuven dies, Levi must still be alive in order for us to say that Reuven's money goes from Reuven to Levi. However, if Levi died before Reuven died, there would be no acquisition. Levi would not have acquired Reuven's possessions. Only if Reuven died before Levi does Levi acquire Reuven's possessions. That's the limitation on mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis. However, for matnas shchiv meira, that's not the case. Let's say, for example, we have a shchiv meira, somebody lying on his deathbed, and he says, we'll call him Reuven, I want my money to go to Yosef. Right? And it just so happens that Yosef dies before Reuven does. Reuven's lying on his deathbed, he's about to die, but somehow Yosef dies before Reuven does. Yosef's yorshim, his inheritors, would get Reuven's money. Reuven's money would still go to the familial possession of Yosef, and instead of just going to Yosef, since Yosef's already dead, the money would go to Yosef's inheritors instead of to Yosef. But the same thing would not apply to mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis, because remember, we said according to Rabbeinu Tam, there's a specific limitation that Reuven must have died before Levi. The mace must have died before the mekabel. Okay. Now, Rabbeinu Tam introduces those two limitations between mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis and matnas shchiv meira in order to explain why we need both. It's a little bit difficult to pinpoint exactly what the conceptual difference is between these two forms of kinyin according to Rabbeinu Tam. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei hameis and matnas shchiv meira are two different forms of kinyin relating to possessions of a mace. what is the conceptual difference between the two? So I think Rabbi Natan points to these two differences in order to make the difference. I think what we have to extract is the conceptual difference between the two based on these two laws. Remember, there are two differences according to Rabbi Natan. Number one, in Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis, they have to be in the possession of a third party. And number two, in Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis, the nosein, the person giving the money, has to have died before the Mekabel. Reuven has to have died before Levi. Now, why is that true? So it seems like, according to Rabbi Natan, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis is not an antithetical, anti-definitional kinyan. Usually, by kinyan, we require some formal acquisition. We have Reuven, Shimon. Reuven wants to sell something to Shimon. Shimon has to do a formal acquisition. He has to lift an object up. He has to pull an object into his own possession. That's what's called a formal acquisition. This, what we're talking about right now, is an anti-definitional kinyan. Because there's no formal acquisition that takes place. It's based on only the words of the Shchid Mirah, only the words of the person lying on his deathbed, that an acquisition takes place. Just the fact that the Shchid Mirah said, I want my possessions to go to Yosef, that Reuven said, I want my possessions to go to Yosef, that in and of itself sells the possessions to Yosef. No formal acquisition is required. It's anti-definitional to our general conception of kinyan. However, according to Rabbi Natan, Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis is somewhere in the middle. It's not exactly anti-definitional, because Rabbi Natan requires the meis to start the process of kinyan. You have to start the process of acquisition. You have to take the money out of your rishus and put it into the hands of a third party. You have to die before the mekabel dies. The mekabel, the person who you're giving the money to, has to be alive in order for the kinyan to work. Because those are the basic rules of kinyan, that if you have a nosein and a mekabel, that both of them are alive. You have a nosein, the nosein gives his money to the mekabel. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, we're starting the process of kinyan, and therefore, when the person dies, all that's happening, according to Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis, is that the Rabbanon are completing this process that the nosein already started, that the meis already started. Okay. That's a little bit of a sharp chiluk between Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis and Mana Shchid Mirah, but we'll go on from there.
Did you say the Mekabel and the Rabbi Natan's first case? Does he have to make a kinyan or not? I must have missed that.
According to Rabbi Natan?
Yeah.
In which case?
Not the Shchid Mirah, the
Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis.
When he's talking about the
No kinyan is necessary. After Reuven dies, Levi acquires his possessions. Harehim, the nation Ashtal.
When is the
Chava? That's a huge difference according to Rabbeinu Tam. Also, according to Rabbeinu Tam, it seems like the Matana is Chal from the time of the Tzivoy.
Right. So that seems to be that these two differences are just symptoms of that more basic though. That Manash Chivera is Chal when he gives the Tzava. Therefore, it doesn't make a difference whether the person dies, when the Mekabel dies before the Nosein, because the Nosein, as long as the Mekabel was alive when he had that Tzavah. And also, you don't have to worry about Jerusha issues, and therefore you don't have to have it outside the possession of the estate for the Shlish.
Exactly.
And both those things are just the idea that Mash Tivra is at that point at the Tzavah, and Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis is only after the person dies already.
Exactly. That's 100% correct. I think it points in the direction of what I was saying also, though, because Mana Shchid Mirah, we're saying that it's Chal at that time, which means that it's really antithetical to our vision of kinyan. There's no formal acquisition that takes place, and just by the fact that you said something, the possessions are already acquired
right,
by somebody else.
Mana Shchid Mirah is suman kunsurin dami, that usually, when he's alive, no one has any problem with him picking up his possessions and handing them over to another party. Mana Shchid Mirah, the finish is, without handing it over, you're saying the anti-definitional, right, that is as if he did hand it over, that's the koach Mana Shchid Mirah.
Exactly.
Everything else is working either, if you don't have it that way, then you really have Yerusha. So you have to avoid Yerusha by this Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hameis.
Right. Which I'm saying is like the start of the process of a kinyan. You get the, you take your you take the money out of your rishus and you give it to somebody else. Right? And that's exactly.
So if you did a Mana Shchid Mirah on someone who's not alive. So it's at the time of the Tzavah, it's not effective at all?
I think so, yeah. I think at the time of the Tzavah, I think the person who you want to give the money to has to be alive, because somebody who's dead is not considered a Mekabel. But the Chiddush is that if you want to give the money to someone and then he died, that the money would go to his inheritance. Yeah. Okay. So let's just.
There should be another time parameter, too.
Huh?
There should be another time parameter. Because the Shkuv Mishnah, apparently, you got to be on your deathbed.
Yes.
And apparently,
sure.
From this other thing, you can do that.
Right. So Rabbi Natan says that that's even from a bari. Right. Well, but that lends to the chiluk also, because what's going on in Shkiv Mira is that it's really just this antithetical kinyan. It's just the Rabbana instituted this kinyan that somebody lying on his deathbed should use. Yeah.
What if he's on his deathbed, but miraculously, he really doesn't die and has a combat stand? Then what's the status of?
Very, very good question. So there's a huge discussion about specific. That question depends on the specifics of the matana. But somebody lying on his deathbed wants to give of his estate to somebody else. So it depends on whether he wanted to give some of his estate but keep the other half. Like for example, let's say Reuven's lying on his deathbed and he says, I want to give everything but this small piece of land to Shimon. So we say that from the fact that he said, I want to keep this small piece of land, he's showing that if he recovers, he really wants all of his money back. He didn't really want to give all the money. He only wanted to give it if he died. But since he kept that small piece of land, he's showing that I really want all of my money back. I might have confused that. But anyway, it depends on those specifics.
Does he have the right to do this if there are debts that he owes? Can he absolve himself of debts that he owes by saying, I want all my money to go to?
Well, the debts would transfer to his inheritors.
But if he makes this matana,
the question is, can you circumvent by giving away
escrow? Right.
Then what happens to the person to whom the money is owed? Let's say the car
supposed
to go.
Right. So, but the abstract debt would still be inherited. Yeah.
Okay.
The inheritors would still have to do the abstract debt. Okay. Let's just discuss one nafkamina to these three different approaches. Let's jump to source number 12. Source number 12 is the Ran of Masachas Gittin, the Ran al Arif. Okay, so the Ran is discussing Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis, and he makes a very important limitation to Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis. He says the following, in the middle of the first line, we're not going to get into the entire background of this case, because we ran out of time a little bit, but we'll just get to the Ran's limitation. So the Ran says the following: Kitana yitnu la'achar misa haynu mishum mishas diburo zachavo velo mishum mitzvah. He said, okay. All right, we have to give a little bit of back. Okay. So the Mishnah in Masachas Gittin says the following. The Mishnah says, source number 9: Tenu mana le'ish ploni v'mis yitnu la'achar misa. The Mishnah says that if Reuven says to other people, give this money to Levi, and then Reuven dies, we give the money to Levi. All of the Rishonim, now that Mishnah is not based on Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis, and all of the Rishonim wonder, why is that Mishnah, why is that rule not based on Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis? Yitnu La'achar Misa, why is that not a case of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis? So the Ran is saying in source number 12, the Ran says that that's not a case of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis, because according to the Ran, that Mishnah of Yitnu La'achar Misa is saying that Levi already owns the money. Reuven wanted to give money to Levi. Levi already owns the money. Therefore, we have to give the money to Levi after Reuven dies. And because that's the case, according to the Ran, therefore, this is not a case of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis. Clearly, the Ran is arguing that Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis is not working through kinyin, but rather working through a mitzvah, through an obligation. And therefore, this could not be a case of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis, because if it were a case of Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis, Levi would not have owned the money already. So the Ran is arguing that Mitzvah L'Kayim Divrei Hamis is a mitzvah, like the first two approaches we suggested, and he says the following: the nafka mina b'yisomim ketanim delav b'nei me'avin mitzvah ninu. What would happen if the yorshim of Reuven were ketanim? Let's say the yorshim of Reuven were, Reuven's yorish was 6 years old, okay? And Reuven said before he died, I want my money to go to Levi, okay? Would Shimon, Reuven's son, who's only 6 years old, would he have an obligation to give the money to Levi? So the Ran says no. because Shimon is not chayiv in mitzvos. Shimon's a katan. And if mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is a mitzvah, Shimon is not obligated to fulfill any mitzvah. Therefore, he need not fulfill his father's request. He need not fulfill that obligation because there's no obligation on him. He's only a katan. However, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is working through a kinyan, and that when Reuven dies, his money is acquired by Levi, then Shimon never owned that money. The poor six-year-old never owned the money. He has to give the money to Levi because it's rightfully owned by Levi. So this is a huge nafkamina between the Ran and Rabbeinu Tam. According to the Ran, the mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is just a mitzvah. Since Shimon, our six-year-old, is not chayiv in mitzvos, therefore he need not fulfill the obligation that his father wanted him to do. He doesn't have to give the money to Levi. He's not chayiv in anything. He's a katan. However, according to Rabbeinu Tam, that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is working through a kinyin. Shimon, our poor six-year-old, never had any rights to that money because it was already acquired by Levi. Okay, so let's just recap for 1 second. We had three approaches. We had, number one, we had mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis adhere to all the requests of a mes. Number two, mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis do with the mes's possessions as he wishes. Those two were in the camp of viewing mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis as a mitzvah, as an obligation. The yorshim would inherit the money of our deceased, and they would have an obligation to do with the money as the deceased wished. And in the third camp, we have Rabbeinu Tam, that mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis is not actually an obligation, but rather working through kinyin, that when Reuven makes a certain tzivoy, when he makes a certain request, at the time of Reuven's death, his possessions are already acquired by Levi, the person who Reuven wanted the money to go to. And we saw a couple of nafkaminos. Number one, we just saw on the Ran, right, would Ketanim be obligated to mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis? But that would depend on whether you view mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis as a mitzvah or a kinyin. Number two, does the money have to be in the hands of a shlish? Rabbeinu Tam argues that they have to be in the hands of a third party. It's not necessarily the case that, according to the Ran, that they would have to be in the hands of a third party. And other nafkaminos as well, that we won't be able to get into right now. Just wanted to end off with one quick thought. So in source number 17, the Hadar Zakenim, one of the Bali Atosos Al Torah, so he says on Aruchi Sechid Varecha, he quotes a Merish that says, Kimosha Atam Itzavani Kain Atzavel Achai Bishas Misasi Laha Alusi Mikan Kimosha Matinu Shomar Le Achav Pakod Yevkora Lokim Eshev Ali Sevesat Musay Mizay Etechem. This Medrash points to a parallel between Yaakov and Yosef. Yaakov asks Yosef to bury him in Mitzrayim, and Yosef asks his brothers later on, at the end of Parshas Vayechi, to bury him in Mitzrayim. So we see, to bury both in Eretz Canaan. Yaakov asks Yosef to bury him in Eretz Canaan, and Yosef asks his brothers to bury him in Eretz Canaan. But we have a parallel between Yaakov and Yosef with the way in which they relate to burial. And I thought that this parallel may be very enlightening in terms of mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis, especially from the Tashbetz. We saw mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis as part of the Torah's general category of Yerusha, part of inheritance. One of the main ideas behind inheritance is that the inheritors are coming in the place of the bequeathers. We call it kam tachas aviv. When a father dies and he bequeaths certain possessions to his son, the son is taking the place of the father. He's continuing the legacy. He's continuing everything that the father stood for during his life. The son is supposed to continue that as an inheritor. That's what it means to be a yorish. It's not purely a financial law. It's not purely that I get the possessions of the deceased, but rather I have an obligation to follow in the path of the deceased. And I think that maybe that's what's behind mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis. If a mes makes a certain request, part of continuing on his legacy, part of coming on in his place, of being kam tachas aviv, is to fulfill everything that the mes wanted. And that's exactly what's going on with Yaakov and Yosef. We see Yaakov makes a certain request that Yosef bury him in Eretz Canaan. Yosef makes the same request. He carries on the same legacy, he carries on the same tradition, and asks his brothers to bury him in Eretz Canaan, because that's exactly what mitzvah l'kayim divrei hamis and this whole category of Yerusha in the Torah is about. It's about the inheritors coming in the place of the bequeathers. It's not only a monetary law, but rather showing how we're trying to carry on the legacy of from the bequeathers to the inheritors. All right, so have a nice fast.
Get it, Shabbos.
Wow.
Really good.
Howie, how do you stop?
Nobody knows how to stop.